This week on The Inswinger.
It's Manuel Pellegrini all over again. It's a guy who's passed his best, who probably underperformed at whatever big job he had.
I do think Arteta now needs to look at this and probably make a few tweaks.
This is probably as concerned about City I've been in the last couple years.
I think they'll be kicking themselves. I think they're a better team than United. They will think they should have won the game.
Welcome back to The Inswinger Season 4, Episode 8. I'm Charlie DiMatteo, joined alongside
Harrison McGlashan.
Couple twists and turns at the top of the Premier League table. Some interesting results at the bottom with our two teams as we preview El Sacico for another year running with West Ham and Everton. The Inswinger Derby coming up. But before we get to that, we're going to touch on the three teams that made up the title race last year, the three teams that we predict are going to make up the title race, or maybe not, after some results this weekend. That's Arsenal, Man City, and Liverpool. Each team had a big result this weekend for both good and bad reasons. We're going to start with the Gunners, who made their trip up the Tyneside. Lost 1-0, and it was a really underwhelming performance because this was a game where Arsenal were down for large chunks of the game, and they never really looked like they were going to get back in it, at least from where I was sitting. What did you make of their performance and another defeat for the Gunners? Are they slipping away from the title race already?
Concerning. Probably their worst display of the season, I thought. You know, they had the excuse of the red cards in the other occasions where they dropped points. This time, they just couldn't create enough. Just over one expected goal, one big chance. Pope didn't really have to make any saves, and I just think that is the concerning piece. It looks like they miss Odegaard more and more every week, that creative spark in the middle. I mean, listen, Newcastle are a good side. They lost their last year. St. James's Park, it's a tough place to go. All of that, I get. It's all true. But Arsenal needs to get their act together, I think. They have the quality. Saka and Martinelli were there, Trossard, Havertz. These are the guys that we expect to light it up, right? So the team is there. I do think Arteta now needs to look at this and probably make a few tweaks to get them creating more chances in games like these. Because that, I thought, was the narrative usually, and I've said this before on the pod, you feel like Arsenal are always in it. You feel like they're going to get that goal. It didn't feel like that on Saturday, and that's the concerning thing. The lack of chance creation. Are they being a bit too stingy at the back? I said last week, I don't think they're a defensive team. I'm not quite buying that narrative. But I do think they need to revamp the attacking side of things to get more shots on goal and big chances, because we just didn't see it on Saturday.
Yeah, I think Arsenal are in a spot of bother. I think I made a comparison last year to, you know, the Liverpool teams that kept coming up short against City, but they kept going again and they eventually won a league title. And I said, Arsenal are kind of in that position now where it's been 2 years running now. They've come close but haven't done it. And now we're starting to see cracks appear, not in a way I think that they lack quality, because like you said, they have the players, and I think they've done a pretty good job at supplementing the right players to continue that competition, to keep everyone fresh, to keep that competition rising. But I think they're struggling to keep up for a third season running with Man City, and it's not even Man City they're keeping up with right now. Liverpool are setting the pace, and Arsenal are staggering to keep up with them. So part of me wonders whether Arteta is struggling to motivate these players to go again, because I think that's what, you know, stopped Liverpool from only winning one title. Obviously, Man City's brilliance has something to do with that. But, you know, these Arsenal players, are they up to the task to come so close 2 years in a row and go again away at St. James's Park in a game where they went 1-0 down? Last week, they probably let 3 points slip from them at home against Liverpool. You know, is that weighing on them? I think it's a lot right now for Arsenal without Odegaard, like you said, that creativity. They're having to grind out results. They're having to win different ways. It's not coming easy. And it was already going to be a challenge to get the motivation back to go again. But if it's not coming easy early in the season, I mean, we're 10 games in and you're already seeing big cracks. So, you know, maybe, and we'll get into how this title race is shaping up already, maybe a Premier League winner won't be required to get 90 points this year. It would go against, you know, past recent history, but it's kind of shaping up that way, that none of these three teams that we'll get to are this invincible juggernaut. Each team kind of has their flaws and their strengths and are susceptible to a loss. So real interesting defeat for Arsenal at Newcastle. Anything else you wanted to add?
Makes for a better title race, right? With if they are indeed flawed. I think Arsenal, maybe it's a case of, have they focused, I don't want to say too much, but have they worried too much about what they're doing off the ball? Have they put so much energy into that that they've lost a little bit of what's on the other side of the pitch and going forward? Maybe they just need to play a bit freer, get back to that old spirit that they sort of used to play with, and sometimes still do, that freedom to really just unlock teams and just go and use the quality they have. Because when Saka's at his best, when Martinelli's flying, when Trossard's getting the ball in the half turn, I mean, they can be great to watch. And we saw it sort of last season, and we saw a nice balance of it where they were stingy and tough to beat, but we saw some great football. So maybe it's just a case of balancing the two to get back to their best.
Yeah, and you touched on Saka there. I don't think he was great at the weekend. I don't think he's been amazing this year. I think he does look a bit leggy at times, and I think that's just a buildup from the Euros, burnout. From playing all these games. Burnout is real, and if it's not injuries forcing guys to miss games like we're seeing, well, it's a drop in performances. So it's going to be up to the guys like Trossard. Odegaard needs to get back fit ASAP. Declan Rice missed a big chance, and people are talking about him a little bit this year especially. He had a great first year in an Arsenal shirt, but expectations are high. You're a 100 million pound player with a chance at the end of the game to get a crucial point, and he kind of just fluffed his lines. It was a poor effort on that header at the back post. So, you know, questions will be asked there, and as results like this continue, questions will be asked of a lot of players. And then this Edu thing, which we can get into briefly. I mean, it's a coincidence, kind of. Is it? Maybe not. Edu Gaspar, who's been Arsenal sporting director pretty much since Mikel Arteta came to the club, announced he'd be leaving at, I think, the end of the season, taking up a role with Forest in their multi-club system with Marinakis, their owner. I mean, what did you make of that? Is that something completely different or a symptom of things falling apart at Arsenal? I mean, is there something more to this story here?
Maybe something we don't know. Shocking, if I'm being honest, that he would leave this project. I mean, I don't know of a more exciting project in the league, I guess, Forest, according to him. I mean, listen, there could be tons of factors we don't know about. Sometimes people just want something new. But from the outside looking in, I'm sure the money Arsenal give you is plenty. It's a great squad. It's a great manager. It's a team you built and haven't quite. Don't you want to see them get over the line before you try something new? Like, this isn't exactly Omar Berada leaving Man City after being the CEO and achieving everything in the game.
Right.
So it's a little early, I would have thought. But again, we don't really know what his deal is. Maybe it's really just a case of wants to do something different. I mean, there's a lot to like about Nottingham Forest right now. I know it's only been 10 games, but they are third, and Marinakis seems to want to spend some cash, and they're a Premier League side, and they've got a great fan base, and, you know, they tick a lot of boxes, but they're not Arsenal.
They're not Arsenal,
that's for sure. So I think everyone is quite surprised at their resignation.
Yeah. It's definitely an eyebrow raiser, and I don't know whether to jump on the idea that it's – because like you said, if you're Edu and you've built this team, they haven't won any silverware. They're still a young enough core where if you want to stick around and supplement with players in summers and transfer windows to come, you can. So for me, it's a weird one and really concerning. If I was to go drastically, you know, not conspiracy theory, but like, all right, let's get inside Edu's brain. He's thinking, we blew our chance the last 2 years. Something's not right. Performances are dropping. I don't like the way this is going. I want out, which I think is extreme.
A stretch. Yeah.
A stretch. But you could make that you can make that viewing, kind of, I guess. I mean, remember when Klopp announced his resignation? He was like, I could envision getting to the end of the next season, but then the preparation for the next year, I just couldn't see myself going again. So when we're talking about burnout from players or from a mentality standpoint amongst this Arsenal squad of having to go again, maybe it's Edu who's the one who's like, I'm sorry, I can't hack it.
Yeah, maybe he thinks he's taken him as far as he can.
Yeah,
he's done as much as he could. I can't give you any more resources or you know, players that won't disrupt things. Like, this is the team. This is what I've given you. This is it. So I don't know. Maybe he's just out of ideas.
It's peculiar. It really is. So we'll see where Arsenal go from here at the end of the season with their recruitment. Because
tough act to follow.
It was pretty strong from Edu. It really was. And we'll see what happens with Forrest. We know what kind of owner Marinakis can be. A bit of a hothead.
Why would you want to work for that guy?
I don't know. I just remember him. I remember the picture of his credentials lying in a bush the game he sacked Steve Cooper, and someone he must have just tossed them in a fit of rage. But have fun with that, Ed. Enjoy the Midlands.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the second of our three title challengers, potentially. Man City, who we're used to kind of seeing at the top of this little three-horse race. But it was another defeat in the league, and they lost in the Champions League.
And the League Cup. Terrible week for
Man City. They're not on a good run whatsoever. This time it was at the hands of Bournemouth, who are a tricky team. You're taking down Arsenal, taking down City. Iraola's boys, my underrated player, James Tavernier, putting in performances.
There you go.
Is this what we foresaw when Rodri went down? These kind of shaky performances. There's other injuries in the squad. Pep's had some bizarre press conferences. He's like, I only have 13 players available. He seems very prickly at the moment, yeah. Pep. I mean, where are Man City at?
I don't know. They are in a bit of a pickle here. A similar story in terms of the game to, excuse me, to Arsenal's defeat, I thought. Bournemouth created more. They had more XG, more shots on target, more big chances created. And I just think I come back to that midfield with Gundogan, Bernardo Silva, Kovacic, all great players individually. It's just not as secure as it would be if Rodri was in there. I think that's a fact. So I think teams are taking advantage of this. Bournemouth simply took their chances. I mean, they are a clinical team at times with Semenyo and Evan Nielsen, who looks pretty sharp. City didn't really play with out-and-out wingers, and it just didn't quite work, I thought. They just don't look quite as sharp. But, as I've said before on the pod, they do always hit their stride later in the season, so I'm weary of predicting their downfall just yet.
Yeah.
I do think this season is different without the Ballon d'Or winner in Rodri in their team for who's going to be out for the remainder of the campaign. I do think that makes a difference. But, I mean, I worry more if we're sort of grouping the title race into one here. I worry more about Arsenal not capitalizing on this rather than City falling behind, because history tells us City will make up the ground. Yeah. I'm pretty confident in that. I worry more about Arsenal. But yeah, I mean, three defeats on the run in all competitions. I mean, Spurs, we know, have a decent record against them. Okay. Sporting, to get thumped by them 4-1 or 3-1, whatever it was, in the Champions League, is a bit of an outlier. So something's not quite right. I'm confident that they'll get it right because they are so good. But listen, I want to, you know, Bournemouth are a good team. I know they're 10th and, oh, they're just mid-table, little old Bournemouth. I'm telling you, man, the Premier League is as competitive as it's ever been from top to bottom. I mean, we'll get on to Everton and West Ham and, you know, the relegation battle. And, I mean, look at Southampton, man. They keep the ball. I mean, I don't think they're very good, but, like, goes to show they've got a few guys. I mean, every team has something about them and a style of play. And Bournemouth didn't need, you know, 75% of the ball, but they could still beat you. You know, they've got players and they've got a really good coach. And, you know, so I think you have to place a lot of credit with Bournemouth. Wasn't it their first ever win over Man City?
I think so.
I mean, just scenes at the, what's their stadium? Vitality. Yeah.
So 800 strong away end.
Classic. Crazy. But yeah, I mean, just something is a bit off there. That being said, they're only 2 points off the top of the table, so you can't panic just yet. They've been here before.
Yeah.
So I again, like I said, I'd be more concerned about Arsenal at this moment.
I agree with that. I agree that I'm more concerned about Arsenal. That being said, this is probably as concerned about City I've been in the last couple of years because of Rodri. He's the heartbeat of their team. And what he allows, as we've touched on, you know, when he first went down, is that against smaller teams where you're going to dominate the ball, which is everybody for Man City pretty much, there's a freedom that's unlocked for the attacking players when Rodri's back there securing the midfield and protecting the defense. And without him, everybody else is just that little bit, I think, unsure. Whether it's positionally, whether it's tactically, whether it's mentally, not having that force, Rodri there, I think it affects them on a big level. And I think this is what makes the title race so intriguing this year, because like you've said, I think, like you, last year, I was in a similar spot when Man City were kind of waiting and waiting. We're like, yeah, but give them a bit of time. I think without Rodri, the calculus is different. I think it changes the equation, because I just think there's something different here without him, without, like you said, the Ballon d'Or winner. From a mentality standpoint, from a tactical point of view, if you're pepping the dugout, you have to change things, rejink things, make that midfield tick without a world-class player. I think it's hard, and you're going to see results like this. And then I know it's not the league, but that Champions League result is concerning as well, just to ship four goals. Like, even with Rodri, maybe they lose that game, but they don't ship four goals, I think. And it's going to be really fascinating, I think. Fingers bloody crossed that
they keep losing.
They keep losing. And I then maybe Arsenal can stick around and we'll have a great title race. And I don't know. I still have PTSD from the last 6 years about this team. So I don't want to speak too soon. But I think the warning signs are going off for Pep. I think his contract's coming up, the Rodri injury, everything's kind of pointing towards maybe time to move on. So we'll see. But another big 3 points drop for Man City. Lastly, though, in this title race, Liverpool. A big test for them this weekend. They went down early against Brighton. They were down for large portions of the game. Took until the 70th minute and Cody Gakpo to get the equalizer, and then they broke quickly on the break. Mo Salah with a signature finish to get the 2-1 win. And on a weekend where their two rivals in the title race both lost games, they picked up a big comeback win in emphatic fashion. Arne Slot continues to impress in his limited time. Can we comfortably say that, not comfortably, can we say Liverpool are the title favorites right now? Is that crazy to say?
I don't know if it's crazy. I wouldn't go that far. They're in the race. They're well in it. They wouldn't be my favorites. I still think City are always going to be the favorites just because of what history tells us. But I have been impressed, obviously, with this Liverpool team. I mean, the slot machine, they're calling it. It just keeps going. I mean, you always believe Liverpool will get it done at home, right? Yeah. I mean, that's just – and I think that was, you know, that is something
except against Forest.
Except against Forest, true. No matter who is in the dugout at this point, you always believe in them at Anfield. So I just think almost no one can hang on to a lead at Anfield with a whole another half left to play. It's nearly impossible, it feels like, at this point. I mean, in terms of the game, possession was pretty even. Liverpool were well ahead in terms of what they created. They had the momentum in that second half, especially. Four big chances to Brighton's one, 8 shots on target to Brighton's 5. And scored 2 goals from 1.95 XG. So they did what they had to do, and they sit 2 points clear at the top of the league, and they've just been consistent. I think that's the word with them, right? Just, I don't know, if I think they're going in only one direction. It's getting sort of slightly better every week. Yeah, we've seen a few, not slip-ups because they've still won games, but, you know, when they beat, was it Chelsea? We didn't think they were, like, fantastic or at their best, but just solid, tough to beat. Not a defensive team, but so solid at the back, I think, this season. And going forward, we know the talent they have, the options they have. Nunez has sort of come back into the fold. Gakpo's found a bit of a home on the left-hand side, looks better there. Salah's doing his thing. Curtis Jones having a good season. So he's got the balance right. They look set up. They look like they're set up in the right way, and they're playing. They've just been steady, just really consistent and steady. And you're not seeing many dips in performance levels from their players. And he's just... it's a machine. I think that's the word, really. It's just they really look like a well-oiled machine.
Yeah. It's really interesting to see the difference between this Liverpool team and Arsenal, given the transitions both teams have gone through. And what I mean by that is Liverpool last year, with all the transfers they brought in, with Klopp leaving, it's almost this perfect mix of you got the new players in, with Klopp around to help them bed into Liverpool culture so he can set the record straight on, you know, what it means to be a Liverpool player and get them all gelled together. And then you bring in a new voice, not because there was a sacking, but because, you know, it was just time for Klopp to leave. And this new voice offers a refresher. He offers a different perspective on the game, and that gives if done correctly and effectively, which it has been so far, can give the players maybe a new edge they didn't have towards the latter stages of Klopp. So, I mean, it's a masterstroke if done correctly by Liverpool. If they can pull this off, that would be unbelievable. But, like you said, I do think it's too much to say they're favorites right now. But by default, that kind of leaves City favorites, who I just said are as in as precarious a position as they've ever been in under Pep, I think, in recent memory, which makes this so fascinating because it's surely not Arsenal. No. Is it Liverpool in their first year under Arne Slot and his first year in the league where he's going to have to navigate, you know, four competitions? That seems like a stretch. But is it Man City, who have lost three on the bounce and are without their best player with a depleted squad and a manager whose contract's up the other? It seems like none of these guys are the clear favorite, which should, in theory, make for an entertaining title race again this year. So
yeah, we can only hope.
We can only hope. We'll see. Two teams, though, that are facing this weekend that are nowhere near the title race, sit in 14th and 16th, respectively, are two teams, Everton and West Ham, all a bit of deja vu. We'll each get into what's currently wrong with our team. I'll let you start with your boys, Everton. Because there's different perspectives. We're both underperforming and struggling right now, but expectations, I think, were very different at the beginning of the year. So what's the current climate at Goodison Park?
Yeah, the vibes aren't great. I think there's more fan frustration. And it's just kind of building because we know we don't play great football. So every time you lose and you don't play fantastic football, the mood is all that worse. Mm. You know, I mean, against Southampton away at the weekend, it just wasn't enough in the final third. Three big chances, over 1.5 expected goals, didn't score. It's the theme from the start of last season that seems to have resurfaced, where we just can't put the ball in the net. And listen, I mean, Southampton, they like to keep the ball. They did that. They're good at that, but they don't pose a huge threat. And we really limited them to next to nothing. They got one on the break after Beto hits the crossbar with 5 minutes to go plus stoppage time. Everton have it all to do, and they couldn't pull one back this time. And it's frustrating because, like I said, we limited them to little chances, but Everton couldn't take their own chances, and that was the difference. Everton, I thought, were sloppy in possession at times. McNeil didn't really have his best day, so you're losing a bit of creativity when he doesn't play well. And we just couldn't do enough on the day, which is really disappointing because Southampton are just they're not a good side. They're really not. I mean, let's be real. I said on Twitter, you can't hide from that result because it is a poor one. Everton should be winning that game, even on a slightly off day where you're not quite as sharp as you should be for 90 minutes. The game was there to be won, and Everton did not capitalize on that, and the fans are pissed. And listen, I find it sort of irrelevant to discuss, you know, the future of the club because we don't know anything until the Friedkins come in. So Dyche, I don't think, is going to go unless things get really bad. As long as Everton are above the line, that's all that really matters right now. Get to the new ground in the Premier League, slowly build a new team. Dyche's contract is up in the summer. You can deal with that then. If they want to deal with it sooner, fine. Thelwell, the director of football, same situation. So there's so much uncertainty. Calvert-Lewin, again, it's not really going to be dealt with right now because we have new owners on the, you know, on the brink. So I just don't really think there's any reason to start panicking or speculating until we know what the Friedkins want to do, right? So I think it's important, focus on the here and now. What are we seeing on the pitch? Well, we're seeing a little bit of what we saw last season at the weekend. We created enough. Yeah, we're not great to watch. Sure, we surrendered a bit of possession to Southampton, but the shape was there. They didn't create a ton. Everton couldn't quite take their chances. It tried to get Lindstrom going on the right-hand side. He started to kick on a little bit. And Dye looks a threat. Calvert-Lewin didn't have his best day. McNeil didn't have his best day. I don't know why Brathwaite's not playing yet. That's a question mark. He keeps coming off the bench in the last two games. Surely he's fit now. But I think Dyche is a very traditionalist in that, you know, maybe it's Keane's shirt to lose now. And you have to sort of do that.
Don't change your winning team.
Right, yeah. I mean, before that, Everton weren't unbeaten in five games. So, sure, there were three draws in there, but, you know, Palace at home, good win. Newcastle, draw at home, decent. Fulham, draw at home, decent. Ipswich away, good win. I mean, everything was going okay. But like I said, when you don't play the football and you can't get the result, that's when the question marks really come into play. That's where Everton fans get frustrated. And I think if we're being realistic, Dyche probably isn't the long-term solution here. because I think new owners, I think any new owner really will want to be ambitious and will want to get this team playing some decent football. And I think there are some players there who can do that. But I'm always skeptical of being a bottom half team and trying to knock it around and be progressive. I don't think that always works. I don't think it's going to work for Southampton this year. Yeah. You'll talk about West Ham. So I think Dyche's style can suit us, and it has suited us in games. It didn't work at the weekend. And listen, I've supported Dyche. I think he's done a lot right. I think he's made mistakes. I don't think he's perfect. I don't think he's the ideal coach if you're Everton, right, want to get up the league and play a nice brand of football in a new stadium in front of, you know, the Everton faithful. So, of course, we all want to see our team play decent football and not be Route 1 all the time. But there are still some things to like. It's not always Route 1. It's not always Sam Allardyce, you know, play off the center forward. I think there's a little bit more about Everton than that. But we're not the best watch. So, like I keep saying, when we lose, it's all that more frustrating. But again, I'm not pushing the panic button. I'm not. We're doing okay. We're above the line. It's a bad loss. A chance to bounce back at the weekend at West Ham, where we won last year. A chance to win at Brentford, at home to Brentford the weekend after that. Some difficult fixtures after those two games. I think we're going to start to see really what this team is made of. I keep coming back to, we're better on paper than we were last year. Mm. So I think we'll probably be okay. We've got a couple more attacking threats that I think can make a difference. So I think that will work in our favor in the long run. But again, it's going to be a slugfest. It's going to be a bottom half finish. Hopefully it's going to be above the line. I'm still confident at that. But 14th at best, you know what I mean? Like that, the expectation is not really there
either.
That's
kind of where it is, yeah.
Let's remember where we were, right? We're just trying to, we don't have a lot to spend. We're just trying to survive. I hate that that's the expectation. It sucks to just have to just want to survive, but let's be real here. This is where Everton are at, and that's the job Dyche is tasked with. I think it's the job he's doing. It's the job he's done in the past couple of seasons. It's probably a job he will do. I have confidence that he'll be able to do that. It's not going to be sexy, but he's probably going to get the job done.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting the way you kind of framed the expectations for Everton as I talk about West Ham and our expectations coming into the year. And Julian Lopetegui has been an utter failure in his first 10 games. He's mixed and maxed formations. He has no idea the way he wants to play. Seems like the players don't really want to play for him. We've got guys getting sent off left, right, and center. They can't be asked to even stay on the pitch. And while I could harp on Lopetegui, I think a lot of West Ham fans kind of not predicted this, but weren't convinced on him. And questions went back to David Sullivan. And he's well known to, he won't pay compensation for a manager. So essentially, he limits the managers we can look for to guys who are out of jobs. So why are they out of jobs if they're such a good manager, right? That immediately you're limiting yourself to who you can bring in. And Lopetegui is just completely flattered to deceive. He's just not good at anything. We can't play with the ball. We aren't good defensively. It's been a mess. So now, if you're West Ham, you have all these great players. What do you do? I don't know. I think they're going to stick with him for the time being. I think if we lose to Everton at home, I think there'll be real pressure. But the board and Sullivan, I mean, this guy, he's a bit of a clown. Like he won't pull the trigger because it's probably going to make him look bad, to be quite honest with you. But I think fault has to go to Tim Steiden for the recruitment. Not all of it, because I think we've got some good players, but the Fulcrook signing is the big one. But even without him, we still have a very good team and guys that should be performing that are underperforming, and I think you have to look at the manager. One thing I will not hear, and ironically it's one thing West Ham fans have been pretty on the same page about, is this, you know, be careful what you wish for, asking for David Moyes out. No, David Moyes had to go. We conceded more goals than I think any Premier League season of the last decade under him. We were shipping fives and sixes and sevens in games, and it was clear his time was up. But there were links to Ruben Amorim, who is now the Manchester United coach, and David Sullivan didn't want to pay the compensation fee. Who knows if Amorim would have come? Maybe he wouldn't have. But it came out that Sullivan didn't want to pay for him. There was never a look at anyone like Tuchel. It was always kind of Lopetegui. I'm struggling to remember now the other options. Kompany, maybe, who's now the manager of Bayern Munich.
But how do you go from that to Lopetegui?
I don't know. He's this middling guy who used to coach Real Madrid in Spain, so it's like, oh, Spain, Real Madrid, attacking football, big money, good players. Boom. I'm like, I'm having deja vu. It's Manuel Pellegrini all over again. It's a guy who's past his best, who probably underperformed at whatever big job he had, and now the expectation is you're going to come and transform what is, I think, an above a mid-table group of players into a team that wants to play like a top four group. The way you transition from a mid-table team to a top four team, just look at Aston Villa. It takes a really good coach, a bit of money, and some time. But, you know, they went through Steven Gerrard and it failed. They went through Dean Smith and it failed. And they got Unai Emery. And everyone was like, wow, what a get. Unai Emery's coming to Villa Park. Nobody said that about Lopetegui. So how can you expect this guy? He's like, oh, well, we'll get a Spaniard of our own. You know, he's coached some big clubs. He's won, has he won a European competition? Maybe. I think he won the Europa League with Sevilla. He did, yeah. Sevilla Europa League merchants. That doesn't count anyway. But now we're facing Everton. It's El Sacico. I mean, what I'm expecting you guys to kind of sit back, us to look really underwhelming with the ball, and you'll probably nick a goal off a set piece. That's probably the way it's going to go.
Similar to last year. Didn't we get one on the counter?
Yeah, Calvert-Lewin? Yeah. I remember sitting in his exact chair, and my point being with David Moyes is, you know, when we don't have the ball, we aren't good because we can't dictate play. The goal was to bring in a manager and some players to make us better with the ball, to create chances so we could be on the front foot against teams around us and not have to rely on the counterattack and individual brilliance of Kudus, Bowen, and Paquetá. Because when those players dried up last year, we dried up. There's been nothing that was – can't finish the analogy. There's nothing to have been dried up because they never got going under Lopetegui because they never figured out how to get him right.
He doesn't know what he wants to do.
So it's a bit of a mess. It's just a real blah
looks
watch.
Bad. Looks
it
bad looks on bad. On Sullivan, man.
Yeah.
It looks really bad that you bring in a guy that was just gettable.
Yeah.
Right? And with a decent CV. I mean, I see a lot of – in this appointment, what I saw from Mashiri – with Benitez, right?
It's like,
great CV,
yep.
But he's past it.
Past it.
He's past it. I don't care that he knows the city. I hate that so much. So it's not the winning formula this day and age in the Premier League.
No.
It's just not the way to move up the table. You need to be a bit more creative. You need to think outside the box a little bit more. I just don't know how you go from Amorim and Kompany to Lopetegui. Totally different.
Yeah. And I mean, just look at someone like Bournemouth. I mean, I remember when Bournemouth sacked Gary O'Neill and we were all like, huh? Like, he just did a great job. And they go get Iraola, this guy from Catalonia. Like, wow. And he really struggled, but then he clicked. And that took a courageous move from their owner, the American, who's – I actually like the guy. Maybe Michael B. Jordan had a say in that as well. He's one of, like, the face owners.
Yeah.
But that was a really clever and creative move, and it's paid off big time. They beat Man City, and Wolves are struggling with Gary O'Neill in charge. So that was – it takes skill to do that. And I don't think skill in the realms of football – go hand in hand with David Sullivan, and they left Tim Stuyten to do the recruiting, and I think for the most part he's done a good job of getting in players I think are good, but God, Lopetegui's ability, and this is where I'll end things, his ability to make quality players look bang average is incredible, and it's really sad to see. Who knows what's going to happen this weekend? 10 o'clock kickoff between our boys should be a good one.
Nil-nil written all over it.
Yeah, crap game probably.
Put your bets in.
All right, let's wrap things up quickly with a review of the game. We did a combined 11-4, Man United and Chelsea. This was a bit of an interesting one. The new manager bounce was like kind of in the air midweek for United in their cup game. Van Nistelrooy in the touchline. Bit of a cagey affair. A penalty put United in front. And then Chelsea, to their credit, came right back. Moises Caicedo, who you pointed out last week, has been growing in confidence. I think other guys had good games for Chelsea. Where does this result leave these two teams? Obviously, United have got a new manager coming in. Chelsea still sit pretty fourth in the league.
Yeah, I think for United, it was a little bit better, but more of the same, really. A little bit all over the place. You can't expect Ruud van Nistelrooy to change everything in so little time in charge. I thought the back-and-forth sort of nature, end-to-end nature of the game suited them, but they didn't really make it count. They didn't take their chances. So the takeaway is that there's a lot of work to be done. Amorim, I'm almost certain, will try to get them playing a different style of football. I mean, you can only hope. That's pretty much why they hired him. Yeah. So that will take time to implement. There's a lot of work to do. But like I've been saying, I think the players are there. I think they can play some decent football if they tried to. But it's gonna they'll go through some growing pains, for sure, because it's going to be totally different. For Chelsea, I think they'll be kicking themselves. I think they're a better team than United. And I think they will think they should have won the game just based on quality alone. I don't think they frustrated United as much as they could have. The stats are relatively even, and if anything, they favor United. And I think that, like I said, was due to sort of the nature of the game. It was a bit end-to-end. It was a bit frantic.
Yeah.
But we know Chelsea are good in transition, but it just didn't really happen for them on Sunday. I just didn't think they needed to run with United. I think they could have been a bit more clever, put their foot on the ball a bit more, and be a bit more clinical, really. That's really what it came down to. They didn't quite get enough from Madueke, not quite enough from Neto. So I was a little bit disappointed with Chelsea. I think they would have gone there thinking, we can beat this United team.
Yeah.
But it is the most drawed fixture, I think, in Premier League history. So sometimes the history books can predict the result better than we can. But, I think it was a little bit maybe naive from Chelsea. Maybe they went with the flow of the game a bit too much and didn't, you know, try to sort of take the game to United and be a bit more clever, like I was saying. So I think the game was there to be won, and neither team could quite get over the line. So shows where they're at. You know, Chelsea still sort of growing, still maturing. United still trying to sort of go gung-ho at times on the counter and not quite showing enough quality and just showing the work that needs to be done there.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one for Chelsea because, like you said, they had – I think a couple chances. Neto had a couple half chances. There was a couple chances towards the end with Jackson. I think, though, it's still a good point in the manner in which they responded and for Caicedo to get the goal. And Enzo, that was the big chance at the end. He squandered, I think. Because Chelsea need guys to step up other than Cole Palmer. And we've started to see that in bits. Whether it's Madueke 1 week or, you know, Caicedo another week. But I think they need more consistency from more players. I think you're getting that in other areas of the pitch outside of from the goal-scoring areas. But if you can get that from the goal-scoring areas, I think that's the platform to take Chelsea to the next level. Because they've got the firepower. I mean, João Felix is there on the bench most games. We know what he's capable of on his day. Can he be that guy? I don't know.
Nkunku, too.
Nkunku and Jackson, I mean, for all his flaws, he scores goals. He does. I think that's the key for Chelsea to take the next step. And although it didn't fully come off at Old Trafford, I think bouncing back right away in the manner that it did is impressive nonetheless. It's hard to do that at Old Trafford because in the game where maybe they were slight favorites – and they had been underperforming for, you know, the best part of over an hour in the game. Heads could have dropped. They didn't. I think that's another sign of mentally they're growing as a young group. They're playing together. Reece James was playing again. He's fit.
Yeah.
Kind of. He wasn't great. He gave the ball away a couple times.
He's got a problem there.
Yeah.
I think with Reece James and Gusto because he can only have one right back.
Right.
Really. And he's trying to play Reece James at left back. I'm not quite sure that's the role for him.
Yeah, he came in a couple times as an inverted guy. He just gave the ball away. Gave it straight away. I mean, Ugarte made a nice challenge. So, but if you can get, that's another thing. If you can get Reece James firing and fit, what an asset he'll be. And you know, we think we both like Gusto.
Yeah.
So interesting times for Chelsea. I think, you know, just to put a button on it, they're ahead of where, I mean, at least where I saw them this year.
100%.
I think there were just so many question marks over Maresca. It's been a positive start, so we'll see. They're in fourth, and they've got European football, but it's the Conference League.
They have to win that. I mean, they're the best team in that by far.
By far.
So, I mean, and then they are top of the league, I think, in the Conference
League. West Ham won that competition the year they finished 14th in the league. So,
A Premier League team should always win that. I don't know how Villa didn't, to be honest.
Took their eyes off the ball, I guess. All right, that's going to do it for this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next week recapping the El Sacico. We'll see if someone's head is gone. I doubt anyone will be, but should be an interesting result nonetheless. And until next time, thank you for listening.